from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
We're looking at 6 minutes past the top of the hour. You are tuned into America's Radio News. This is where the nation comes to get informed. Glad you're there. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. It is Tuesday, March 1st. Here's what's happening.
It is undeniable that the Recovery Act helped every single state represented in this room manage your budgets, whether you admit it or not.
Defending the spending. The president sings the praises of the stimulus.
I met with a lot of religious leaders earlier today to talk about the strategy. And I think it's important that we understand that what we want to do here is win the war, not just win a battle.
The Speaker of the House wants to win the war against spending.
I'm a man of my word, so I will finish the TV show. I'll even do season 10, but at this point, because of psychological distress, oh my God, it's $3 million an episode. Take it or leave it.
So you want to raise.
And Charlie Sheen, the victim?
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe to bring you all the latest news.
The budget battles continue here on the streets of America in the States and also up here on Capitol Hill. And, of course, the meltdown in the Middle East continues. Hello, Lori London.
Hello, Chris Salcedo. And thanks to all of you for being with us. It is Tuesday, March 1st. That means we are heading towards spring, Chris.
Oh, thank goodness.
And that is a good thing.
Yep.
Well, in defiance of Western military and economic pressure, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi is dispatching forces to a western border area, stirring more fears that the bloodiest Arab revolt may grow even more violent. This as the West weighs military options, suspicions growing. The veteran leader is not grasping the strength of the forces now gathering against him. In Moscow, a Kremlin source called him a living political corpse who has no place in the modernized, civilized world, but Gaddafi appears oblivious to outside pressure.
President of the United States making some comments about the woes going on in Wisconsin, especially as they relate to public employee unions. And the governor of that state, Governor Scott Walker, responded to those comments, saying in a statement, quote, "I'm sure the president knows that most federal employees do not have collective bargaining for wages and benefits, while our plan allows it for base pay. And I'm sure the president knows that the average federal worker pays twice as much for health insurance as what we're asking for in Wisconsin. I am sure that President Obama simply misunderstands the issues in Wisconsin and isn't acting like the union bosses in saying one thing and doing another."
Well, a Danish family whose sailboat was seized by pirates in the Indian Ocean wrote on a travel blog before the hijacking it was in contact with anti-piracy forces and was prepared in case of an attack. Well, now those same pirates are threatening to kill the family if any rescue attempt is made.
Well, we mentioned President Obama took a little bit of a swipe, a veiled swipe, at Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker yesterday as he told the visiting governors that public workers should not be vilified.
I recently froze the salaries of federal employees for 2 years. It wasn't something that I wanted to do, but I did it because of the very tough fiscal situation that we're in. So I believe that everybody should be prepared to give up something in order to solve our budget challenges. And I think most public servants agree with that. But let me also say this. I don't think it does anybody any good when public employees are denigrated or vilified or their rights are infringed upon. Now, we need to attract the best and the brightest to public service. These times demand it.
Yeah, the president said he froze pay for federal government workers, but he neglected to mention that he really grew the public sector since his tenure in office. They have grown by hundreds of thousands, while the private sector's had to cut back to unprecedented levels in this recession.
Well, one of the big teachers union presidents is speaking out. Randy Weingarten, the current president of the American Federation of Teachers, says teachers should be allowed to police their own profession.
Even when I was in New York in the mid-2000s, I finally said, I said to the chancellor and to the mayor, you know, stop it already. Let us police our own profession. They wouldn't let us do that. But when you have actually these peer processes, they actually police our own profession
they
better.
Are you saying that they've worked?
They've had, in a system of
25,000 teachers, they'll have two fired a year all across the country, city after city.
Actually, the peer processes, frankly, fire about 40 to 100% of the teachers that are in there. They basically counsel people out of profession. But what I'm saying is, and Arne Duncan has said it and others have said it too, if we're really focused on teacher performance, let's start with a real evaluation system.
You know, these teachers say this: the bargaining is a fundamental part of democracy. And if the current way to bargain isn't working because it was created so many years ago and our times have changed, then maybe government and the unions need to work on a compromise to find a better way to collectively bargain instead of just gutting the unions altogether. And I think that's part of their issue, you know? They're saying we're making financial compromises, but don't take our ability to compromise and bargain away.
What do you think about her suggestion that the public employee unions ought to be able to police themselves? I mean, taking that model, that means that anybody working at any job can just say, hey, you know what, bosses, you don't need any oversight over me. Let me negotiate my own salary. I'll name what salary I'm going to make. We'll police ourselves. You think that's a dynamic that can go out of government into the private sector, too?
Well, I think that's her response to the fact that all of their rights are being taken away, or pretty much all of them.
After a day of dealing with client Charlie Sheen's bizarre talk show tour, his longtime publicist, Max Levine, called it quits late last night.
Well, I would have left earlier than this. I think he has left his calling card long ago on the world as to whether or not he is acting in profoundly self-destructive ways. I mean, it's become so bizarre, so self-destructive, that it's almost hard to dignify without seeming insane yourself.
That we have much more, Lori London, of Charlie Sheen. As a matter of fact, the soundbite roster is full here with Charlie Sheen, and we'll make sure we get that in due course here on the show.
Chris, I'm starting to feel sad for the guy.
All right.
I am.
We'll explore that deeper here in a little bit. In the meantime, it's 12 minutes past the top of the hour. Coming up next on America's Radio News, Danielle Pletka is the Vice President of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. We'll talk to her about what's happening over in the Middle East.
And a new report reveals massive waste contributing to America's debt.
And China's holdings of U.S. debt actually a lot more than first reported. We'll get into those reports coming up right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news
so you don't have to.
If it breaks today, hear it today when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
Fast, reliable, and always informative. This is America's Radio News.
And we're looking at 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to America's Radio News, coming to you live from the nation's capital. Get you to your headlines here in a moment. But first, we want to go to America's Radio News line. Standing by is Danielle Pletka, the Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Danielle, welcome to America's Radio News.
Welcome, Danielle.
Hi there.
Hey, wanted to talk to you a little bit about this whole idea of freedom over in the Middle East. I've been hearing a couple of pundits talking about how President George W. Bush must feel vindicated because he was always on the side of saying these people were always deserving of freedom. They had the capacity for freedom. And you wrote in a piece here recently that the United States should promote a freedom agenda over in the Middle East. What were you talking about?
Well, I think that the problem that we're facing right now is that we're seeing revolutions in all of these countries. We're being smacked in the face. We have no idea what's coming next. What I've always said is that what we need to have is a policy that supports evolution so that we are not surprised.
You left us speechless.
I'm trying to digest that for a minute. Okay, so there's a lot going on there.
Let me make it a little bit clearer.
Sure.
Look, at the end of the day, what we've done over the years is we have supported one dictator after another. Some of them are more congenial dictators. Hosni Mubarak, more congenial. Some of them are less congenial. Muammar Gaddafi. But at the end of the day, the United States has been associated with backing a series of regimes that are against their own people. What happens when the people are fed up is they rise up, they overthrow it, and what's left in the wake are governments run by people who aren't necessarily going to be very positive toward the U.S. and our interests because we've spent our entire career backing the wrong guy. That's the problem for us.
So, Danielle, we obviously, some people are saying the Obama administration was a little slow on the uptake here with responding to the crisis in Libya. Others are saying, you know, he wanted to wait until all Americans were out. And then he really started to make it known, you know, that the U.S. wants Gaddafi out. We've got warships moving in. What do you think the role is for the U.S. and Libya? How much more should we stand by and watch as innocent Libyans are getting slaughtered? And how much can we really do?
Well, it's a reasonable question to ask what we can really do. But I think what President Obama's failed to recognize is that being the President of the United States does not allow you to sit on the sidelines and wait till it's convenient for you to say the right thing. We are a moral international leader. We're the world's greatest economy. We're the world's greatest military power. We can't have no opinion. Even if the President of the United States thinks we ought to be embarrassed about those things, at the end of the day, you can't have no opinion. When the government of France is out in front of where the United States is in condemning a brutal tyrant's murder of his own people, you've got to ask whether the president's doing the right thing. The impact alone on our ability to lead in the region, on our ability to protect our allies and our interests, forget about the people of the region for a second, our own allies, our own interests, we are hurt by that. And I think the president was too late on to get ahead of the game, both on Egypt and on Libya.
Our guest is Danielle Pletka, the Vice President of Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. So since we're talking about President Obama, why don't we just take his foreign policy as it regards to the Middle East in toto, starting back with the Iranian, the first attempt at a little bit of a revolution back in 2009. Why don't you grade him from that point all the way up? How's he doing?
I think he's doing a terrible job. I think he's been a disappointment to people who want who see the United States as Reagan said, the shining city on the hill. But I think he's also failed to have a vision just by the standards that he set out for himself when he went to Cairo and gave a big speech. He's failed to have a vision for what the future of the Middle East is. Without that vision, we are going to be continually surprised, not just by the overthrow of rotten leaders like Gaddafi, but by the activities of groups like Al-Qaeda and others. We are going to have a huge problem when it comes to the opposition in Iran, which we haven't been willing to stand by. We have no strategy, we have no vision, and we have no policy in the Middle East. The president is apparently, according to the Washington Post, mulling giving a visionary speech, quote, in a few weeks. I mean, seriously?
Mm-hmm. Danielle Pletka, the Vice President for Foreign and Defense Policy Studies at the American Enterprise Institute. Thanks a lot for being on America's Radio News.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, Lori Linden, let's get you to the headlines right now. What is the first thing on the roster there?
Well, Chris, members of Congress, as they're fighting over what to cut in the current federal budget, lawmakers about to receive a blockbuster report that could provide a roadmap to potentially hundreds of billions of dollars in waste. The nonpartisan General Accounting Office poised to release a report today that one senator says will make us all look like, quote, jackasses. Mm. The report was mandated by Congress the last time it raised the debt limit in 2010 of January.
Well, while we're talking debt, we might as well talk about the debt that China holds in the United States. It's much larger than was originally reported. China's holdings of U.S. bonds reached $1.16 trillion at the end of December. That's almost $270 billion, that's with a B, more than previously estimated. The figures came as the U.S. government recalculated its data on foreign holdings of U.S. securities from June of 2010. Chinese-held treasuries have fallen since hitting the high of $1.18 trillion in October under those revised figures. Japan remained by far the second-largest holder of U.S. government debt with $882 billion, and Great Britain was third with $272 billion in debt.
Well, Chris, women are gaining ground educationally and economically, but according to a new study, men still make more money on average, and women are more likely to live in poverty. This is according to a new White House report. Many of the figures have been released previously by different parts of the government, but now they've been pulled together into one document billed by the White House as its most comprehensive report on the state of women in 50 years.
Libya's ambassador to South Africa on Monday urged leader Muammar Gaddafi to resign, joining the foreign envoys around the world in rejecting his regime. Abdallah Azubedi told journalists that at the end, the others of the mission in Pretoria, South Africa, has considered resigning, but they decided that it would leave the people of Libya without representation in a time of crisis.
Well, firefighters in East Central Florida battling a massive, fast-moving wildfire that shut down roads and threatened neighborhoods by midnight, the blaze last night had engulfed 10,000 acres and at least one residence had burned.
Coming up next, Speaker of the House John Boehner, he says the unions have a machine gun pointed at the head of local officials. We'll give you that report.
And a new Dancing with the Stars cast revealed, and Christine O'Donnell is not one of them.
In next, Dan Mitchell, senior fellow at the Cato Institute. We'll talk to him about all the politics on the ground out there on Capitol Hill and in the states, with these unions battling head-to-head with the state's governors. Much more coming your way on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
The heartbeat of America
beats first
right here. Stay tuned for news when it breaks and today's top headlines when we come back to America's Radio News.
If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
All right, it is 34 minutes past the top of the hour. You are tuned into America's Radio News. In a media full of lapdogs, we are the watchdogs. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for being with us. It is Tuesday, March 1st. Here's what's happening.
It is undeniable that the Recovery Act helped every single state represented in this room manage your budgets. Whether you admit it or not.
Defending the spending. The president sings the praises of the stimulus.
I met with a lot of religious leaders earlier today to talk about the strategy. And I think it's important that we understand that what we want to do here is win the war, not just win a battle.
The Speaker of the House wants to win the war against spending.
I'm a man of my word, so I will finish the TV show. I'll even do season 10, but at this point, because of psychological distress, oh my God, it's $3 million an episode. Take it or leave it.
So you want a raise?
And Charlie Sheen, the victim?
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe to bring you all the latest news.
And we're looking at 35 minutes past the top of the hour. Lori London, hi, how you doing on America's Radio News today?
I am doing great, Chris Salcedo, and thanks to all of you for being with us on this Tuesday, March 1st. We are heading towards spring. I can feel it, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
A Libyan leader, Muammar Gaddafi, yesterday telling ABC's Christiane Amanpour his people love him and would die to protect him. This as the U.S. began moving warships and air forces closer to the North African oil-exporting country. And Libyan embassy now also saying it's siding with the opposition, condemning what it calls all acts of murder and terror taking place in their homeland. And more European countries are freezing the assets belonging to Muammar Gaddafi and his family.
Speaker of the House John Boehner weighed in on the labor protests rocking the Midwest, saying that the current system of collective bargaining is too tilted in favor of unions. In some of these states, he said, you've got collective bargaining laws that are so weighted in favor of the public employees that there's almost no bargaining. Boehner went on to say in an interview with David Brody of the Christian Broadcasting Network, we've given them a machine gun and put it right at the heads of local officials, and they really have their hands tied.
Well, Fed Chair Ben Bernanke is likely to remain skeptical about the strength of the economic recovery in testimony today, despite recent data pointing to improvement, signaling the central bank is unlikely to cut short its $600 billion stimulus plan. Bernanke is testifying in the Fed's twice-yearly report on monetary policy before the Senate Banking Committee. He'll probably nod to improvements in the economy while indicating there's still room for monetary policy to help.
All right, let's get you on over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by is Dan Mitchell. He's the senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Mr. Mitchell, welcome back to America's Radio Network News. Hi.
Glad to be on the program.
I'm going to spit that out, I promise.
He doesn't talk much.
Yeah, you know, it's been one of those days. You know what I got to ask you, Mr. Mitchell? You wrote an article here recently about how the GOP seems to be up in arms about the possibility of a government shutdown. In fact, you know, a lot of the media coverage has been, you know, hey, if there is a shutdown of the government here on Capitol Hill, that it's going to really be bad for Republicans, a la hearkening back to the 94-95 shutdown. But you make this case that that's not necessarily so. Why don't you explain that?
Well, I went back to 1995 and I looked at all the contemporaneous news accounts and I found that it was Democrats who were breaking on Capitol Hill and voting with Republicans. It really wasn't until the Republicans made a mistake by reopening the government for 3 weeks and giving Clinton time to run all these ads on Medicare, that the poll numbers turned against them. But even if you look at those poll numbers and you go to the 1996 election, Republicans picked up 2 seats in the Senate and only lost 9 in the House after winning 54 seats in 1994. But then, most importantly, because I care about results, not the politics, what happened after that shutdown is we had a 4-year period of government spending growing by an average of only 2.9% a year, and we went from a $164 billion deficit to a $126 billion surplus. In other words, the fight may have hurt Newt Gingrich's poll ratings, but it didn't hurt Republicans politically, and far more important than that, we actually put a clamp on government spending.
Now, every bipartisan commission who's tried to make a judgment on the budget has said that we do need to do something big. The deficit is a huge problem, but we need to do it over the long term, maybe over the next 10 years. But to try to balance the budget on 12% or to balance this on 12% of the budget isn't necessarily the way to go, and we need to do this more modestly. What is your take on that?
Well, first of all, I think it's very important for all of us to understand that our problem is government spending. Deficits and debt are simply the symptoms of the underlying problem. Now, we have a government spending problem. Government used to be $1.8 trillion when Bill Clinton left office. It's now $3.8 trillion, so both Bush and Obama have been terrible news in terms of fiscal responsibility. The simple thing, when you're in a hole, stop digging. let's do what we did in the 90s when we balanced the budget. Put a limit on the growth of government spending. And this fight over, I don't want to use beltway jargon, but the CR, the continuing resolution, it's just a spending bill for the rest of fiscal 2011. Put a limit on that. That's what this fight is about right now. And then when we put together the fiscal 2012 budget, put a limit on the growth of spending there. There's no great mystery. Just make sure government spending grows slower than the private economy.
But what about the argument that you have to spend money to make money, and things like our infrastructure that's dated and falling apart isn't really helping our economy, but jobs could be created by improving on some of those things?
When you try to help the economy by taking money out of the productive sector and having politicians spend it, it's almost a surefire recipe for a weaker economy. We saw that certainly with Obama's failed stimulus program. We diverted a big chunk of money, almost $1 trillion, from the private sector to the government, and unemployment went up. We need to leave resources in the private sector where people actually have an incentive to use them wisely. We don't want to copy Greece and France, which is what Bush and Obama did for 10 years.
Yeah, and that's the confusion, too, because government doesn't produce anything. Government doesn't create anything. It actually takes taxpayer money that has to be earned to actually do what it needs to do. And you brought up a very good point. The President Bush, sir, and by the way, we're talking to Dan Mitchell. He's a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. President Bush, over his 8 years in office, racked up $4.5 trillion in debt. Mr. Obama, in 2 years in office, racked up $4.3 trillion in debt. So he managed to get there a lot faster than President Bush did. But the point remains the same. We are looking at unsustainable debt here in the United States. What do you think the biggest problem is, and what is the best solution to attack it?
As I just said, it's very, very simple. Make sure government spending grows slower than the private economy.
Well, what are you talking about? A balanced budget amendment? Is that the way to go?
Well, but a balanced budget amendment only focuses on the symptom, which is deficits. We need to cure the underlying disease. If you have a brain tumor and that's giving you headaches, you don't want the doctor to give you aspirin for your headaches. You want to get rid of the brain tumor. We have a government that is far too big. And frankly, even if for some reason, you know, somebody gave us $2 trillion of tax revenue, so we had a budget surplus. That would not change one iota the argument that we need to shrink the size and burden of the federal government, because it's the government spending that diverts resources from the productive sector of the economy. Whether they finance that spending with taxes or borrowing, that has important sectoral effects, but the real problem is the government spending itself.
And Dan, my last question to you, it's a very simple one. Are the American people undertaxed?
Not at all. We have a record tax burden in this country. Well, as a share of GDP, tax revenues are down a little bit because of the recession.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Obama's forecast, if you look at the congressional budget forecast, we're going to have way above average burden of federal taxation in America. The whole reason we have a fiscal problem is because government is too big, period, exclamation point, underline, bold, whatever word you can throw in there.
Tell us how you really feel.
Government spending is the problem.
Dan Mitchell, senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Thanks a lot, sir, for being on America's Radio News with us.
Well, thank you.
All right, coming up, something stinks in San Francisco. We'll tell you what it is coming up next.
Goody. Somali pirates hold a Danish family, and they say they will kill their captives if any rescue attempt is made.
And John Edwards could be making headlines, and not in a good way, coming up here very shortly. We'll give you that report coming up next, right here on America's Radio News. Of course, this is where the nation's news breaks.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is America's Radio News Network, where the nation's news breaks first.
If you want to get informed, you've come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, a pirate in Somalia is warning they will kill their Danish hostages if any rescue attempt is made. Abdullah Mohammed telling the Associated Press he has ties with the gang holding the Danish family, including three children. And he's providing reliable information, according to AP, in the past. Mohammed said any attack against the pirates would result in the deaths of the hostages. And he's also referring to the killings last week of four American hostages.
A federal grand jury in Raleigh could that Mr. Edwards knew that some of the millions of dollars given by at least two wealthy donors was being used to help support and hide some contend Riley Hunter, the campaign videographer with whom he had a prolonged affair and a daughter they conceived together.
Well, drinking a lot of soda and other sugary beverages have now been linked to an increased, or they have been linked to an increased risk of obesity and diabetes, among other health problems. But here's another reason to cut back. I know you love those sugary sodas, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
A new study suggests even one sweetened drink per day may contribute to higher blood pressure. And the more sugary beverages a person drinks, the higher his or her blood pressure is likely to be. This is according to the American Heart Association.
Ouch. Yeah. San Francisco's big push for low-flow toilets has turned into a multi-million dollar plumbing stink. Skimping on toilet water has resulted in more sludge backing up inside the sewer pipes. That's according to the City Public Utilities Commission. It's created a rotten egg stench near AT&T Park and elsewhere, especially during the dry summer months. The city's already spent $100 million over the past 5 years to upgrade the sewer system and sewage plants, and in part to combat that odor problem. Now officials are stocking up on $14 million and a three-year supply of bleach.
Ew.
To act as an odor eater and to disinfect the city's treated water before it's dumped into the bay. It will also be used to sanitize drinking water.
Now, that'd be one of those incidents where you're driving in the car, you're from out of town, and you look at your partner in the car and you say, did you? Did you?
Right.
No, it wasn't me.
All right.
It's in the air. All right.
Happens all the time.
Well, AWOL State's Wisconsin Senator Jim Halperin told Fox News he's willing to stand for a recall if need be, saying he would accept the judgment of the voters if he has to.
Every single Wisconsin state senator who is eligible to be recalled, and that's about half of them, will have recall petitions filed against them. Some of those will possibly be successful, some won't. But this is a strategy that groups on both sides, not necessarily Democrats and Republicans, but groups on both sides of this issue are going to be pursuing.
So you're not afraid of that then, is what you're saying?
Well, I've been recalled once before and survived the recall election, so it's not a new process to me. But no one likes to have an extra election. It's something, though, that I'm willing to do so long as workers' rights are being eliminated. I'm just not in favor of that, and I'm willing to stand for recall and accept the judgment of the voters.
Well, labor leaders and Democratic lawmakers They feel Walker's proposal is clearly intended to undermine the unions, and it goes well beyond anything to do with the deficit, and they're willing to do whatever it takes, including let the voters give their opinion on it.
Right, and Governor Walker and his supporters contend that, yes, they are going after the union's ability to put the state in fiscal peril once again down the road. They're making concessions now, but what they're saying, if they don't get this collective bargaining, which some contend goes against the public interest, if you don't get that collective bargaining under control, as in some states it is, in some states you can't have collective bargaining by the public employees because at the end of the day it's the taxpayer that carries the freight. They're saying you got to get it under control. All right, Charlie Cook from the National Journal, he's already looking ahead to the 2012 election. Do you believe that? And leaving the presidential election aside, Cook's focus is on control of the United States Senate.
Democrats face a really tough challenge trying to hold on to their majority. You know, they've got, an open seat in North Dakota that's just going to be Kent Conrad's seat. That's going to be extraordinarily difficult to hang on. You know, unless they get the right candidate, I think Democrats are going to have a very tough time in Virginia holding on to the seat that Jim Webb is vacating. And Webb would have had a very tough race anyway, but as an open seat, unless Democrats can get a Tim Kaine or someone like that, that's going to be very, very, very hard.
Yeah, he's also looking ahead to 2014, saying that the math just doesn't look good for Democrats, meaning there are going to be more Democrats up for re-election in the U.S. Senate than there are going to be Republicans. And that goes not only for the 2012 cycle, but also for 2014.
I'm just wondering why it's all about deficit now. We aren't hearing too much about jobs.
Well, $14.2 trillion is a pretty big number.
It is a big number.
It's a huge number.
We are still a nation with a lot of Americans out of work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, back to Charlie Sheen, because he's all over the map. He's doing interviews everywhere. I'm waiting for him to come on this show, Chris.
And he's out of work.
And he, you know, so, you know,
yeah.
We got a gig for you. Well, over on the Today Show, Charlie Sheen said he wants over 3 million per episode now.
You're angry.
Two and a Half Men.
Well, I'm not angry. I'm passionate. And it's like everybody thinks I should be like begging for my job back. And I'm just going to forewarn them that it's everybody else that's going to be begging me for their job back. I'm a man of my word. So I will finish the TV show. I'll even do season 10. But it's at this point, because of psychological distress, oh, my God, it's 3 million an episode. Take it or leave it.
Oh, so you want a raise?
Well, yeah. Look what they put me through.
So you make $2 million an episode now.
Roughly. That includes the back end, yeah.
And you want $3 million now?
Well, because I'm underpaid right now, sure.
You're underpaid?
If you look at the money they're making, yeah, it's ridiculous. I'm tired of pretending like I'm not special. I'm tired of pretending like I'm not a total freaking rock star from Mars. And people can't figure me out. They can't process me. I don't expect them to. You can't process me with a normal brain.
Chris, I'm getting tired of being not people not knowing that I'm the rock star that I am.
You are a rock star, Lori London.
And quite frankly, you know, I just think Charlie Sheen is just right on the mark. No, seriously, I heard him with an addendum to this last night on Piers Morgan's CNN, on CNN, saying he didn't really mean it. He didn't really mean it about the 2 million. But all of this stuff aside, the guy is obviously in trouble.
Self-destruct mode. And, you know, it continued on. So drugs aside, what about Charlie Sheen's partying? Well, Charlie broke down what he called his epic parties on ABC. Check this out.
He loved to party.
I mean, what's not to love?
Especially
when you see how I party, man. It was epic. The run I was on made Sinatra, Flynn, Jagger, Richards, all of them just look like, you know, droopy-eyed, armless children.
When you look back at the last time you used drugs, are you disgusted with yourself? Or do you think, how could I have done that?
I'm proud of what I've created. It was radical.
You're proud of that party moment?
Of course. Why wouldn't I be?
Drugs?
No,
Why would you be?
Because I expose people to magic. I expose them to something they're never otherwise going to see in their boring, normal lives. And I gave that to them. I may forget about them tomorrow, but they'll live with that memory for the rest of their lives. And that's a gift, man.
One of the women said that she was afraid she might OD. One of the women who was here.
What's that got to do with me?
The gift that keeps on giving, Charlie Sheen.
He is a gift.
It's like a train wreck. You know, he keeps on going on these interviews, and it's like we don't want to keep on bringing you Charlie Sheen news, but it's like a train wreck. You just can't look away.
I'm starting to feel bad for the guy.
America's radio news continues. Coming up next, the president's message on Obamacare. He says one thing to the cameras. In private, it's quite a different story. We'll give you that report coming up next.
And Palestinians are now trying to create their own Facebook revolution.
And Sarah Carter, national security correspondent and columnist for the Washington Examiner. We'll talk about all the Middle East turmoil going on with her right next, coming up on America's Radio News. It's where the nation's news breaks.
from the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here, now. Your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
Get ready to get informed. This is America's Radio News coming to you live from the nation's capital. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. It's Tuesday, March 1st. Here's what's happening.
The issue here is whether we make these cuts and reduce the deficit in a responsible manner or whether we do it in a reckless manner.
One Democrat says proposed Republican cuts to spending are a threat to the economy.
We're in a battle for freedom in this country. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The differences between what the Democrats are doing in Wisconsin, Indiana, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., and what the Republicans are talking about are night and day.
The budget is really a fight for freedom, according to the RNC chairman.
I had a blast. I kept waiting to become nervous. Everyone kept asking me, are you nervous? Are you nervous?
Yes.
And the whole ride from beginning to end was just pure joy.
And at least one person was enjoying the Oscars.
Leaving no stone unturned in America or around the world to bring you all the breaking news. And it's breaking over in the Middle East. It's breaking here at home on Capitol Hill and in the state capitals, Lori London.
Chris Salcedo, you are absolutely right. First to the Middle East in defiance of Western military economic pressure, Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi has dispatched forces to a Western border area, stirring fears the bloodshed or the bloodiest Arab revolt may grow even more violent. This is the West weighs its military options. Suspicions are growing that the veteran leader is not grasping the strength of the forces now gathering against him. The U.S. has already began moving warships and air forces closer to the North African oil-exporting country.
To the press and to the governors of the states, President Obama moved to allow the states flexibility in spending health care funds in the most significant change since the law, his health care law, rather, was enacted and a potential gesture toward his critics. This is reporting in the Politico today. But a source on a White House conference call with liberal allies this morning says that the administration is presenting it to Democrats as an opportunity to offer more expansive health care plans than the one that Congress passed. Health care advisors Nancy Ann DeParlay and Stephanie Cutter stressed on an off-the-record call that the rule change would allow states to implement single-payer health care plans on the state level.
The recent surge in oil prices unlikely to have a big impact on the U.S. economy and could dampen growth and raise inflation if sustained. That, according to Fed Chair Ben Bernanke today, he's offering no hint that he was considering cutting short the Fed's $600 billion bond buying stimulus. But he did tell the Senate Banking Committee that he saw increasing evidence the U.S. economic recovery is becoming self-supporting. At the same time, though, he is warning job growth remains far too anemic.
Things over in the Middle East are continuing to melt down. And U.N. Ambassador Susan Rice joined yesterday's White House press briefing to offer an update on Libya and President Obama's meeting with U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
The Security Council unanimously adopted Resolution 1970, a tough and binding set of sanctions aimed at stopping the Libyan regime from killing its own people. As you know, from the very beginning of the crisis in Libya, we've been clear that it's vitally important for the international community to speak with one voice, and it has done so with an unusual and important sense of urgency, determination, and unity of purpose.
Yeah, this is continuing to be a situation that is quickly turning from a United States-centered and the West-centered response to a worldwide response. I think this is a pretty good effort by not only the United States, but some of the countries that have been taking the lead on this, Great Britain, France, other European nations that have been the first to step forward and say we need to take a more decisive role in what's happening, especially in Libya.
Well, and as the president said a few days ago, you know, when you start killing your own people just to stay in power, you lose all credibility. And I think that's pretty clear around the world to everyone except Muammar Gaddafi.
Yeah, it declares you a little out of bounds, doesn't it?
Apparently, he's in denial, to say the least. Well, Congressman Chris Van Halen, a Democrat from the House Budget Committee, weighing in on the big budget debate, saying the deep immediate cuts, as the Republicans want to impose, are just plain reckless.
The issue here is whether we make these cuts and reduce the deficit in a responsible manner or whether we do it in a reckless manner. And the debate at the federal level is not that we shouldn't work to balance the budget and get the deficits under control. The issue is, how do you do it? And the proposal to take $61 billion out of the economy over a seven-month period is reckless when you've got
reckless.
An economy as it's reckless when you've got an economy as fragile as this.
Okay, first of all, I think it must have had music on my head. Chris Van Hollen.
Van Hollen, not Van, not to be confused with the 1980s
band.
No, I was
rocking it out here.
Was going to start
the break.
Jump
so.
There, yeah.
Anyway, regarding what he was saying, I think he's pointing to three of the major bipartisan budget commissions who've said don't try to balance the budget on or balance our debt on 12% of the budget. Be comprehensive,
right.
But do it modestly as to not wreak havoc on a very fragile recovery.
Yeah, he's talking about taking $61 billion from government spending out of the economy, and that's what has him concerned. He didn't seem very concerned when government was taking that same amount of money out of the private sector when it was happening, when taxes were being taken out and when government spending was happening. Some economists would argue that Mr. Van Hollen's priorities are backwards because taking away money from the government is not the same as taking it out of the private sector, which is what government does.
Well, I think what he's saying is go slow.
Karl Rove says that when it comes to polling, President Obama completely on the wrong side of the deficit and the economy.
Look, he moved up after he signed the tax cut deal with the Republicans and after the speech in Tucson. But if you take a look at Gallup, the president's approval on the economy is 36% approve, 61% disapprove, and on deficits, 32% approve, 64% disapprove. Those are the biggest issues that are dealing that we're dealing with domestically right now in front of the Congress, and they're going to dominate a bunch of the of the year, if not the entire 2011-2012 election cycle, and the president is way upside down on those numbers.
Yeah, for the first time, Lori, at least in my lifetime, I think that the American people are really starting to grasp. And especially since the numbers have been so readily available, you know, with the internet and with the sharing of alternative media, that you can actually see and get a grasp of $14.2 trillion. And now parents and grandparents are realizing it's, you know, we're going to be long gone not dealing with this. It's going to be our children and grandchildren that we're passing this legacy of debt onto. And I think Americans are really, for the first time in my lifetime anyway, starting to grasp how much debt we are actually under.
But until one of the sides, Democrats or Republicans, start facing the fact that we need to deal with entitlements of Medicaid, Medicare, and to some degree Social Security, this really isn't a problem that's going away.
No truer words. Coming up on America's Radio News, Sarah Carter. And there's some Van Halen right there.
Nice.
Sarah Carter, national security correspondent and columnist for the Washington Examiner, is up next. We'll talk to her about what's happening in the meltdown over the Middle East.
And Somali pirates continue to hold a Danish family hostage, and they say they will kill their captives if any rescue attempt is made.
And on the ground in Wisconsin, Governor Scott Walker saying time is running out, putting a warning out to wayward Democrats. We'll give you those reports coming up next right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Breaking news and the interviews everybody else will talk about. This is America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter. We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't. This is America's Radio News.
Read about it tomorrow, or you can hear about it right now on America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. Well, the California couple accused of kidnapping 11-year-old J.C. Dugard and keeping her prisoner in their home for 18 years have made full confessions to police. That according to their attorney, Stephen Tapson. The lawyer actually representing Nancy Garrido told reporters she and her husband, Philip Garrido, admitted last month to snatching the girl off the street near her home in South Lake Tahoe in 1991.
Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker's office says the option of refinancing debt in order to save $165 million will be lost if Senate Democrats do not return and pass the bill by today. Democrats, they ran away to Illinois on February 17th to delay indefinitely a vote on that bill that also takes away nearly all collective bargaining rights for most state workers. But the debt refinancing was a major way Walker proposed plugging a $137 million budget shortfall for the fiscal year that ends June 30th.
Well, Chris, messing up the national anthem, the least of her problems now. Christina Aguilera detained by West Hollywood police during a traffic stop around 1 a.m. this morning. The singer's companion, Matthew Rutler, was charged with driving under the influence. And police say Aguilera was deemed extremely intoxicated and unable to take care of herself. Rutler's bail was set at $30,000. Sheriff's Department officials said Aguilera is not involved in any criminal activity and will be released when she can safely care for herself.
It has not been a good year for Christina Aguilera, has it?
And it just began.
My goodness. All right, let's go to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by, Sarah Carter, national security correspondent and columnist for the Washington Examiner. Sarah, welcome to America's Radio News.
Great to be on the show. Thank you.
Hey, Sarah, I wanted to play something for you here. This is Muammar Gaddafi in an interview with Christiane Amanpour from ABC. Sat down with this outrageous exclusive interview with Libya's embattled leader Muammar Gaddafi. So will he be leaving his country anytime soon? Have a listen.
Will you leave Libya?
How come? Has anybody would leave his own homeland? Why do I leave my homeland? Why do I leave Libya?
They love me, all my people with me. They love me all.
But if they do love me...
They will die to protect me and my people. No.
So with your experience, Sarah, at least from my layman's perspective, this doesn't look like it's going to end very well when you've got Muammar Gaddafi saying that his people love him. In the meantime, he's gunning them down with jet fighter attacks. Where do you see this all going?
You know, this is the rantings, and this is not just coming from me, from just watching him. It's pretty obvious, I think, to everyone watching him that he's kind of lost his mind. But members of his own former government, I spoke with Libya's immigration minister over the weekend, who was one of the first to resign from the Gaddafi regime, who said he has completely lost his mind, and those that were closest to him have fled him. And yet, this is definitely going to be an amazing time in our history to watch what happens in North Africa and across the Middle East, particularly now with Gaddafi making this final stand. And according to the experts that I've spoken with and people who are testifying before the House, you know, there has to be a moment where the U.S. and the West take the lead and say, okay, wait a minute. And this is what they're saying. We need to speak out. We need to defend the rights of the Libyan people who are standing up, because obviously Gaddafi is extreme and they're afraid of what he'll do to his people. How we handle this from here on out, though, is really a guessing game, is what intelligence officials have said. We want to make a move, but we don't want to be too drastic. We don't want to be interventionist, but we want to be able to aid them and to stop Gaddafi from this rampage. I think there's a lot of people terrified that Gaddafi is going to take this too far,
right,
and thousands of people are going to lose their lives.
Right. There are reports that he has a stash of mustard gas, and if he gets too desperate, he could use it on his own people. And, you know, the funny thing is, I was watching that interview with Christiane Amanpour, and thinking to myself, she has full access to him, and he's just getting out of a car, and yet we can't just go take the guy out. I know that sounds primitive and it's not something we would normally do, but I mean, how long can this go on? How long can we just watch this guy kill his people?
That's the question. I mean, you're right. We can't just go in there and kill him, although I think some people wish they could. I've talked to people in his own party who were so upset and so angry that they were in tears while they were talking to me about watching the deaths of their own people in the middle of, you know, of the squares and in the various townships outside of Tripoli. But look, what we could do right now, and this is what intelligence officials and U.S. military officials are saying, is put the pressure on Gaddafi. Let the world know, let Gaddafi know that the U.S. and the West don't stand. They stand against him united. Put pressure on him. The no-fly zones is something that they've been discussing, although we realize that might be a difficult situation to push forward. But no-fly zones, no-drive zones. In fact, some of the experts that I've been speaking with, Michael O'Hanlon in particular, he's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute, suggested, and going beyond that, if Gaddafi doesn't stop this, supplying weapons to the opposition groups and finding those opposition leaders that we can deal with, This is certainly a very stressful time. I mean, we don't know how, if we supply weapons, where those weapons will end up. And if we do a no-fly zone, how will the Libyan people react to us bombing some of their major hub facilities, flight areas? So this is something we have to play with very carefully. But I think non-action is what they're saying could be so detrimental and 100 times worse than taking action and stopping Gaddafi before this goes too far.
Sarah Carter, the national security correspondent and columnist for the Washington Examiner. Thanks a lot for coming on and talking about this today on America's Radio News.
Thank you so much for having me.
You betcha. Coming up next, the Obama's stimulus plan, Mr. Obama's health care overhaul, putting the squeeze on the states. We'll give you that report coming up next.
And Iranian forces fire tear gas in clashes with protesters.
We'll also talk to Jordan Fabian coming up next. He's a writer for The Hill right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News. If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
In a sea full of media lapdogs, we are the watchdogs. This is America's Radio News, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. It is Tuesday, March 1st. Here's what's happening.
The issue here is whether we make these cuts and reduce the deficit in a responsible manner or whether we do it in a reckless manner.
One Democrat says proposed Republican cuts to spending are a threat to the economy.
We're in a battle for freedom in this country. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The differences between what the Democrats are doing in Wisconsin, Indiana, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., and what the Republicans are talking about are night and day.
The budget is really a fight for freedom, according to the RNC chairman.
I had a blast. I kept waiting to become nervous. Everyone kept asking me, are you nervous? Are you nervous?
Yes.
And the whole ride from beginning to end was just pure joy.
And at least one person was enjoying the Oscars.
Leaving no stone unturned in America or around the world to bring you all the breaking news. Lori London, it is a beautiful day here in the nation's capital. Had some rain roll through yesterday, and the skies are blue. A little chilly, but not too bad here in Washington, D.C.
Yes, Chris Salcedo, I think we are now on the home stretch here, heading toward spring.
Thank goodness. Couldn't come soon enough.
Well, more European countries and companies have frozen assets belonging to Muammar Gaddafi and his family. International condemnation of Gaddafi's use of force against civilians continues to grow as even Libyan leader denies the widely documented incidences of violence and asserted he's loved by his country.
Wow.
And in an act of international condemnation of Gaddafi's regime, the Libyan embassy in Washington will take down the Libyan flag and replace it with the one that flew in Libya before Gaddafi took power in 1969.
The Obama administration is signaling that it will give states more flexibility in implementing the health care reform law, but that won't help governors plug one of their biggest immediate budget problems, that's runaway Medicaid costs. Several dozen governors are pleading with the president to let them drop enrollees in their costly Medicaid programs. They say with this flexibility, it's critical in closing an estimated $125 billion budget gap for fiscal 2012 that starts July 1st in most states. Governors have been prevented since 2009 from tightening the rules on who gets Medicaid, first because of the federal stimulus program, next because of Mr. Obama's Obamacare law.
Well, Jane Russell, the brunette discovered by Howard Hughes, who went on to become one of the biggest stars of the 40s and 50s, has died. She died Monday at home in Santa Monica of a respiratory-related illness. Hughes, of course, the eccentric billionaire cast Russell in his sexy and controversial 1941 Western The Outlaw, turning her into an overnight star. She then went on to appear opposite leading men like Frank Sinatra and Bob Hope, as well as, of course, Marilyn Monroe. Jane Russell was 89.
All the greats.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's get over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Jordan Fabian, a staff writer for The Hill newspaper. Mr. Fabian, welcome to America's Radio News.
Thank you for having me on.
Hey, wanted to talk to you a little bit about we're going to do a little Washington speak, so I'm going to actually rely on you to decipher it so Main Street understands what's going on. We got the continuing resolution that's being offered up right now. The Republicans are saying it's a little nice little compromise, going to trim about $4 billion off from discretionary spending. So first off, I'm understanding that the Democrats are kind of split even on that. Where do we sit now? Does it have a good chance of passing? And set the table for us, will you?
Sure. Yeah, this bill has a good chance of passing the House. Obviously, Republicans have a strong majority there. Democrats are divided, but with a portion of Democrats going over the Republican side, looks like they're going to send this to the Senate. Now, the Senate has until Friday to pass this bill, which would fund the government until March 18th, and it's a stopgap measure to prevent a government shutdown. So they have until Friday to pass it. And it remains to be seen whether or not they're going to make any significant changes to it. The one significant change that people are talking about is whether they're going to extend it from being a two-week proposal to a month-long proposal. And if they do the month-long proposal, we're not sure how the House Republicans are going to handle that.
So regarding the budget, Republicans say we need to cut, we need to get this deficit under control. Actually, both sides are talking about how we need to get the deficit under control. Both sides have a very different view as to how to get it done. Of course, both sides are saying, we need to work on entitlements. That has not been touched. But Democrats are saying that all the bipartisan commissions that have looked at this budget say, really, the Republican proposals really only touching 12% of the budget. And it's really discretionary spending, and it's really not doing much other than to take a hatchet to the budget instead of a scalpel, as the president would like to say. They're saying it's just too much. What's your take?
These battles are ongoing, and basically the reason why we're debating the short-term measure is because there's such an impasse right now over what to do about spending in the budget. Democrats are coming out in advance of Republicans putting out their budget. They're not going to put theirs out until later this month or in April, so we don't know actually what they're going to propose. But they're saying, look, they can go as far as cutting Social Security benefits for people who are already receiving it. They could be making reckless cuts to education programs and job creation programs that were passed by the Obama administration. So Republicans are saying, look, the fiscal situation in this country is dire and we need to make these cuts now. No side has really come ahead and been able to seize the momentum in order to pass legislation based on those arguments.
We're talking with Jordan Fabian. He's a staff writer for The Hill newspaper. And you know what? Lori brought up a pretty good point, Jordan, that the Republican proposal for budget cuts only doesn't deal with entitlements, any of the big three, as it's being called, only 12% of discretionary spending. To be fair, President Obama's budget doesn't deal with any of that as well. So we have Mr. Obama saying that he wants this continuing resolution, this temporary stopgap thing, to last a month. You brought this up. And then John Boehner saying 2 weeks. What's the reason for the different time frames there?
Well, obviously the Republicans, they have the political power right now, so they want to basically institute their proposal over a longer period of time, and that would also allow them to cut more spending. Their baseline proposal allows them to cut $61 billion from last year's spending levels.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to do that as quick as possible.
And that bears pointing out, too, that the reason why the Republicans are having to do it is that Democrats didn't pass a budget last year when they had the opportunity, which they are constitutionally mandated to do.
Yeah, that's right. And Republicans are using that as a talking point to sort of, put themselves above Democrats on spending.
Okay. Isn't it true, though, that really this is all just a political game? I mean, the president's budget that he first puts out, isn't it true that that's really just a blueprint and no president has ever whose budget has ever come out has been used on the first shot?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's how the White House framed it, too. I mean, look, they want their budget, they came out right away and said, look, this is a starting point for negotiations. They basically admitted that this thing isn't going to be instituted, verbatim. So it's going to be a long negotiation process. And, as long as this goes on, there's going to be talk of a government shutdown until they can pass a resolution that's going to fund the government through the end of the year. Now, going back to what you were saying before, the White House doesn't want these little two-week measures because they say, this is basically going to allow lawmakers to push aside a long-term proposal if they just keep passing these two-week things.
I saw an interview with Kent Conrad. He's a Democratic senator. He was coming out very forcefully saying that we need to have spending cuts. We need to deal with the entitlements. We need to get our spending in Washington, D.C. under control. So he represents more of the middle of the road Democrats, the progressive Democrats who were in charge in the last Congress and for the latter half of the Bush administration. They are the ones that have added this unprecedented amount of debt onto the American people. How are they dealing with having to all of a sudden be reined in, not only from Republicans, but also Democrats that are going over to the Republican side, many of them up for re-election on the United States Senate side, mind you, coming up next year? How are those progressives, the ultra-liberal left wing of the Democratic Party, dealing with actually a consensus now in the government saying, no, you can't spend anymore?
You know, liberals have given lip service to spending cuts, and I think they do support some targeted spending cuts. But their main concern is, if the spigot of government spending gets shut off, then job creation efforts are going to falter, and jobs could be lost. They cited Moody's chief economist Morgan Stanley's report today that GOP spending proposals could eliminate hundreds of thousands of jobs, and so they're saying that these spending programs need to continue until the economy gets back on its feet. The problem is for them is that their numbers were severely diminished in the last election. They don't necessarily have the political power to stop these proposals from going through.
He is a staff writer for The Hill newspaper, Jordan Fabian. Thanks a lot for coming on and talking with us on America's Radio News today.
Thanks for having me on.
Coming up, the nonpartisan GAO, that's the General Accounting Office. It says there is billions upon billions of dollars of your tax money being wasted here on Capitol Hill. We'll tell you about it.
And Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi continues to defy growing worldwide calls for his exit.
And will she or won't she? Christine O'Donnell's prospects on Dancing with the Stars. Is she going to be cutting a rug anytime soon on national television? We'll tell you about it. Coming up next, right here on America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
Broadcasting from the nation's capital, where we catch the news before it gets away. This is America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If we break the story, you know you've got the details right.
America's Radio News Network.
Coming to you live from the nation's capital. If you want to get informed, boy, have you come to the right place. This is America's Radio News. Happy to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Pakistan is hiking oil prices by 9.9% today, a move that threatens the stability of the fragile U.S.-allied civilian government at a time of economic turmoil in the impoverished country. What officials say the spikes in international oil markets, spurred by uprisings in Libya and other parts of North Africa and the Middle East, have forced the raise in Pakistani prices.
As members of Congress fight over what to cut in the current federal budget to avert a government shutdown, lawmakers are about to receive a blockbuster report that could provide a roadmap to potentially hundreds of billions of dollars in waste. The nonpartisan Government Accountability Office, the GAO, it's poised to release that report today that one senator said will make us, meaning lawmakers, look like jackasses. That, of course, is Senator Tom Coburn, a Republican from Oklahoma, saying anybody that says that we don't look like fools up here hasn't read this report. Let me give you some examples from the report. It says it was, by the way, mandated by Congress the last time they raised the debt ceiling back in January of 2010. One example from the report found that if the Defense Department were to make broader restructuring of its military health care system, it could result in annual savings of $460 million.
Well, security forces in Tehran are trying to disperse demonstrators. Iran's security forces fired tear gases and clashed with the opposition supporters in Tehran today, where demonstrators are rallying to demand the release of two opposition leaders. Former presidential candidates Mir Hussein Mousavi and Mehdi Karoubi have not been seen in public since they called for a rally on February 14th, during which thousands of their supporters took to the streets to support uprisings in the Arab world.
Christine O'Donnell, remember her? She ran for Senate up there in Delaware, and she recently received an invitation to appear on Dancing with the Stars while she's going to take a pass. Former Senate candidate, Tea Party favorite Christine O'Donnell will not be donning a leotard anytime soon, well, at least on national television. The Republican announced yesterday that she has declined an invitation to Samba with Celebrities on Dancing with the Stars The Republican said in a statement that she finds the ABC show to be one of the few uplifting shows that are out there right now, but she's choosing instead to finish her book on the 2010 election cycle and her new political action committee.
They do have some interesting people coming on that show, though. They've got Sugar Ray Leonard, Kirstie Alley, Playboy Bunny, Kendra Wilkinson.
Oh.
So there should be some interesting people on the show, without Ms. O'Donnell. There's little publicity for Seattle's first medical marijuana farmers market on Sunday, Chris. No posters or signs. Shocking. Hung outside the market's venue, a small club where erotic poetry readings are held. Word of mouth alone through the packed hall as hundreds of people lined up to go in. They gained entrance with a recommendation from a healthcare provider stating that they need the marijuana to treat a medical condition.
Yeah, I hear they're pretty high on that in that part of the country.
That's funny.
Yes, trying. Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, the Republican, said yesterday that it's time for the Democratic senators who fled his state to come home, and he threatened layoffs if they didn't return to vote.
Those state senators who left with the expressed intention of trying to draw more attention to this bill, have more time to debate the bill and to just discuss the bill, have succeeded. It is now time for them to come home. If they choose not to, the bottom line is if they do not come home, there are dire consequences. Dire consequences I don't think any of us, Republican or Democrat alike, would like to see happen here in the state of Wisconsin. So we'll go to any length possible, any realistic length possible to try and avoid layoffs. But if we don't have the ability to have a vote cast on this budget repair bill, that's ultimately what the choices we're left with.
Not only is he tying that to the layoffs, Lori, but he's also tying this to the $165 million in a budget shortfall in restructuring ability inside of this budget. So he's trying to put the pressure on those Democrats to return back home.
And I read something yesterday that was interesting about how that the move to actually fire these people that he says he will have to fire if these folks don't come back to work is actually just putting it on the back of the budget and isn't really going to solve the problem long term. So we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Meanwhile, State Senator or Wisconsin Senator John Erpenbach told an interviewer from the Democrats' hideout in Illinois that Governor Walker's being disingenuous about the needs of local governments in Wisconsin.
He talked about having the collective bargaining needed to be outlawed in the state of Wisconsin because local governments needed it. Well, they have said to almost an official, we don't want it. Not only do we don't want it, we don't need it. So that was kind of debunked. And then he talked about the $165 million we're going to lose. In reality, the state owes a payment of $165 million on its debt in May, and what he's trying to do is refinance that deficit, that debt, not to get a better interest rate, but to kick the can down the road. And he wants to take that $165 million and use it in his budget, and that's going to cost us $30 million more later on. So it's not a matter of what it's going to take to get us back, because we've already been very clear that this is all about making sure the governor at least publicly acknowledges, which he hasn't even done yet, that the employees have given him all the money he's asked for. So it's not so much what he can say to us. It's more a matter of what he needs to say to the rest of Wisconsin. And he needs to be very honest with people, and he hasn't said.
Well, I think what he's trying to say is that they have given him all the salary concessions, all the pension concessions, and they've also agreed to double their health care contributions. But he doesn't want to compromise on collective bargaining. Well, on to a lighter subject, or it may not be light to some people because obviously this person is in trouble. Charlie Sheen, final stop on his Monday Media Blitz, was with Piers Morgan last night on CNN, where he and Piers opened up the phone lines to anyone from CBS, preferably Chairman Les Moonves, to call into the show.
No one's trying to go. In fact, we're live, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't wear a suit or anything. Well, time issue. I would urge Les or Bruce or Chuck Lorre or anyone to call in while we're here. Huh? I mean,
if anyone at CBS wants to call in.
Chuck has not answered the questions that I asked with Jeff Rawson, who's awesome, by the way. Yeah. That guy. You should have him on. Hmm. I don't know why, but just have him on. He's awesome.
He's a rival. I can't
whatever.
Do that.
Everybody wins. Come
professional
on.
Rival.
I know. Well,
no, but I mean, actually, to be serious, if anybody at CBS, Les Moonves, or anybody else is watching this, and I'd imagine it would have been made aware of it now, I would encourage them to call in, because it seems to me what's broken down here as well. And
there's no communication.
Exactly.
Yeah, and this isn't about me like, oh, until I get an apology, I'm not dealing. No, until like some conversations take place that involve compensation for the 8 shows that we were slated to do. Because when I came back and said, guys, okay, now I'm prepared, and Les said just that Mr. Chow's called me his cleanup hitter. Now you got your cleanup hitter, and it's late August, and I'm sitting on 64 bombs at 420 and 170 driven in, and we're not even in the playoffs yet.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen sounding a lot more cogent there, at least in that
he
one soundbite.
He did seem a little more together, but still, he's got problems.
America's Radio News continues. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about the shutdown, imminent shutdown here on Capitol Hill, or is it so? We'll give the report coming up next.
And Somali pirates holding a Danish family say they will kill their captives if any rescue attempt is made.
Coming up on America's Radio News, it's where the nation's news breaks.
From the nation's capital. If it happens in America or anywhere in the world, you'll hear about it first here, right here. Now, your anchors, Chris Salcedo and Lori London.
America's Radio News Network.
This is where the nation comes to get informed. We call it America's Radio News. Coming to you live from the nation's capital, I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thank you so much for being with us. It is Tuesday, March 1st. Here's what's happening.
Those state senators who left with the expressed intention of trying to draw more attention to this bill, have more time to debate the bill and to discuss the bill, have succeeded. It is now time for them to come home.
Governor Scott Walker says it's time for wayward Wisconsin Democrats to return to work.
Every single Wisconsin state senator who is eligible to be recalled, and that's about half of them, will have recall petitions filed against them. Some of those will possibly be successful, some won't.
And one AWOL Wisconsin senator says he's ready to face the music.
I don't know what the rebels, what their game plan is. If they need money, they're going to produce the oil. If they're going to just try to inflict some kind of pain on the United States or the rest of the world, they'll shut it off.
And a Pickens prediction on the future of your price at the pump.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe to bring you all the latest news.
It is still a meltdown over in the Middle East, and back here at home, the protests continue as state governments struggle to get their budgets under control. Welcome to America's Radio News. I'm Chris Salcedo.
And I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. Well, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said today the administration is actively considering implementing a no-fly zone over Libya. She gave a full-throated defense of robust State Department funding, as well as she testified today before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Clinton has just returned from Geneva, where she met with other foreign ministers under the auspices of the UN Human Rights Council, and said preparations are underway to aid the Libyan opposition, but there have been no final decisions on whether or how to use the U.S. military to support the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi.
The nonpartisan GAO, the Government Accountability Office, is poised to release a report today that one senator says will make us all look like jackasses. That senator is Senator Tom Coburn, Republican from Oklahoma, continuing to say anybody that says we don't look like fools up here on Capitol Hill hasn't read the report. Their report was mandated by Congress the last time they raised the debt limit back in January of 2010. In one example in this report, it found that if the Defense Department were to make broader restructuring of its military health care system, it could result in annual savings of about $460 million. Even more scathing is the duplication investigators found that in the nation's biodefense efforts, with the report essentially saying that billions of dollars spent annually is the responsibility of no one individual and that there is no plan for a post-attack coordination.
While Republicans controlling the House are moving quickly to pass stopgap legislation to avoid a partial shutdown of the government when temporary funding runs out on Friday, today's measure would keep the government running for 2 weeks to buy time for the Republican House, the Democratic Senate, and the White House to try to reach agreement on longer-term legislation to fund the government through the end of the budget year.
26 states' open rebellion against Obamacare continues, and now earlier today, the Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, he was interviewed on Fox News about how his plan to opt out of Obamacare in 3 years would actually work.
Well, first of all, it requires a change in the law, so it's got to get through both bodies. And it isn't as simple as simply opting out. They put four enormous conditions on what they called opting out or providing some flexibility. And one of them that I would point to first is that it has to be deficit neutral, which for a president who's counting 6 years of cost against 10 years of tax revenue to call his balanced, you think he's going to let the states do that? I doubt it.
Mr. Cuccinelli actually echoing a lot of attorney generals, even the one down in Florida, pushing for this opt-out ability, saying that the president's health care law is unreasonable and puts all the onus on their shoulders.
I think, though, the president would probably argue that the opt-out, it will only work if everyone opts in. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
That is the crux of his legislation, after all, that individual mandate.
Absolutely. And that is, of course, the main crux of disagreement about the whole thing. Well, Congressman James Clyburn, a Democrat, says we must raise the debt ceiling in order to buy us the time we need to get the economy under control.
We must do whatever is necessary to maintain our credibility in the international markets. And I don't think that anybody is going to fail to do that. So the debt ceiling is always a problem. But it's something we've got to work through while we get things under control. We know the debt is a big problem, and we want to reduce the debt. We want to get rid of the deficits, but we cannot do so while playing games with the full faith and credit of the United States of America.
I think what he's saying is no one wants to raise the debt ceiling, but at the same time, many economists are saying, don't you dare not do it, because if we do anything to hurt our credit rating, and it could just be disastrous.
And I've heard some folks actually liken this predilection for our federal government to spend, likening money to crack, and likening our lawmakers to crack addicts, because they continue to spend, they can't deal with it.
Vicious cycle.
So unless you put them on an AA for spending, I guess, they won't do it. And I guess that's what some of these Tea Party Republicans are trying
right.
to say, like, okay, we're going to raise the debt ceiling, but not until you kick the habit of spending more than the United States makes. All right, this train wreck that continues to be Charlie Sheen's life is playing out right in front of our eyes. And radio host Alex Jones, he appeared, of all places, yesterday on The View to actually defend Charlie Sheen. Jones, who along with Sheen is a 9/11 truther, even managed to work a paranoid 9/11 reference into his defense.
If I could just say one thing, I've known Charlie for about 6.5 years. He's never drunk alcohol, used drugs in front of me. He's been completely clean for almost a decade until about 7 months ago. Now he's come off the drugs and the alcohol, which is almost like, you know, being off your meds. It has the same effect. So he's supercharged. He's angry. He's focused. And I know that when they interviewed him at his house, because I talked to him, they interviewed him for about 2 hours. And that's a little kind of joke that's out of context. He's tired of being judged and him being held up as the ultimate demon in this world. He didn't kill 1 million people in Iraq. He wasn't involved with the takedown of Building 7 here in New York. And he thinks there's bigger devils out there than himself.
Wow. Doesn't that just kind of stand on its own?
Well, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate here.
Okay.
I have heard some doctors analyzing the situation with Charlie Sheen saying, yes, that is absolutely true, that when someone comes off drugs like that, they do have a heightened sense of euphoria. And it's very possible that he actually may be suffering from manic depression. He's bipolar. I mean, his behavior is obviously abnormal.
Coming up on America's Radio News, we take you live to the streets of Wisconsin. Dustin Weiss, a reporter for 1670 AM WTDY in Madison, going to bring us the update and maybe break some news here on America's Radio News.
And Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi continues to defy growing worldwide calls for him to leave.
And the president's message says one thing in front of the cameras, quite another in private. We'll tell you about it. It's a report in the Politico today. On America's Radio News, this is where the nation's news breaks.
The campaign for 2012 has already started, and we're right in the middle of it.
Keep it set right here to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth. This is America's Radio News.
Coming to you 20 minutes past the top of the hour. Get ready to get informed. This is America's Radio News. Happy you're on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. It is Tuesday, March 1st. Well, women are gaining ground educationally and economically, but men still make more money on average, and women are more likely to live in poverty. This according to a new White House report. Many of the figures have been released previously by different parts of the government, but now have been put together into one document billed by the White House as its most comprehensive report on the state of women in 50 years.
To the press and to the governors of the states, President Obama signaled more flexibility in the way the states implement the spending health care funds and the most significant change since the law was enacted, his health care law, and a potential gesture toward his critics. But a source on a White House conference call with liberal allies this morning says that the administration is presenting it to Democrats as an opportunity to offer more expansive health care plans than the one Congress passed. This is according to reporting in the Politico today. Healthcare advisors Nancy Ann DeParlay and Stephanie Cutter stressed on an off-the-record call that the rule change would allow states to implement single-payer healthcare plans that goes far beyond what Obamacare does currently.
The Ohio Senate expected this week to consider a revised version of a bill to end collective bargaining for public sector workers, and thousands of union members who gathered outside the state house there today said they were bracing for the worst, unlike similar legislation in Wisconsin, which exempts police officers and firefighters. The Ohio bill includes them, making the measure particularly contentious. The bill is expected to be taken up by the Ohio Senate as soon as Thursday.
Let's get you on over to America's Radio Newsline. Standing by there is Dustin Weiss. He's a reporter for 1670 AM WTDY right there in Madison, Wisconsin, and in Ground Zero, where this whole thing started. Dustin, welcome to America's Radio News.
Good afternoon, Chris and Laurie.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, we know that the ruling came down from the courts, that they had to reopen the Capitol. Everybody, you know, it's a public Capitol. Folks need access. Give us the read. What's happening there on the ground?
Well, I just came from inside the Wisconsin State Capitol, where the Department of Administration is admitting people to the building. They're admitting them under legislative escort or police escort if they have an appointment with a lawmaker, and only then to hearing rooms or lawmakers' offices. Now, this would appear to be in direct violation of the temporary restraining order and temporary injunction filed by Dane County Circuit Judge Daniel Moser this morning that ordered the Department of Administration to open the Wisconsin Capitol to members of the public during business hours or at times when governmental matters are being conducted. Right now, I just finished speaking with State Representative Mark Pocan. He's a Democrat here in Wisconsin. He says that this is a clear-cut case of contempt of court being conducted by the Department of Administration here in Wisconsin and Secretary Mike Hipsch under the orders of Governor Scott Walker.
Now, we have placed a phone call into the office of Governor Scott Walker to have him come on here on America's Radio News. We were going to talk to him about this deadline that he says is looming here today for this budget battle. Have you been in contact with the governor's office about this issue, about reopening that Capitol?
We have tried repeatedly to get through to Governor Walker's office here. We've gotten no response. We have also tried calling the Department of Administration. We have gotten no phone responses. Through emails, they sent out a statement today saying that they believe that by allowing people into the Capitol under escort and only then directly to lawmakers' offices or hearing rooms, they believe that they are in compliance with this injunction. Now, this is the same policy that they undertook yesterday when the injunction was filed. The injunction was issued this morning. State Representative Mark Pocan says they would not have issued that injunction if the policies that they were using right now were in compliance.
Now, how many people are you seeing that are trying to get in that are being held off or not being allowed to get into the Capitol?
Outside the Capitol, the crowd has grown over the past 3 hours that I've been on the grounds here, from a few hundred to well over 1,000 right now. They're holding signs. They have bullhorns. They're pleading with the police officers on the front steps, holding copies of the injunctions, begging them to let them in, they say, to the people's house. They're chanting, "We are peaceful. Let us in. Do your jobs and obey the law." But so far, no members of the general public have been admitted to the Wisconsin State Capitol this morning.
Now, Dustin, we are up against the clock. Really briefly, in 30 seconds or less, if you can tell me what these folks are saying as far as, do they have no plans to leave? Are they going to continue to protest as long as it takes to get the governor to talk to them?
For more than 3 weeks, people have occupied the Capitol Rotunda here. Thousands have come to the Capitol every day, up to 70,000. They're not budging, they say, until Governor Walker is willing to revisit his proposal to take away collective bargaining rights from most public employees.
Dustin Weiss, he is the news reporter for 1670 AM WTDY right there in Madison, Wisconsin. Dustin, as always, man, great job reporting on what's happening. You keep us posted as to the goings-on there in Madison, Wisconsin, okay?
Thanks, folks.
All right, you betcha. And you know what? The invitation that we extended here on America's Radio News to the governor, Scott Walker's office, to appear and talk about all the issues going on there in Wisconsin, it stands. So if anybody's listening from the governor's office right now, you're more than welcome to give us a call back here, and we'll get you on the radio. In the meantime, President Obama's stimulus, his health care overhaul, is putting the squeeze on the states here in America. We'll give you that report coming up next.
And the new Dancing with the Stars cast is revealed, and Christine O'Donnell is not one of them.
Ouch. And China's holdings of United States debt, it is much larger than we were led to believe. Those reports and much, much more come your way right here on the station that gives you all of the news right away. It's America's Radio News. This is where the nation's news breaks.
We're keeping an eye on breaking news
so you don't have to.
If it breaks today, hear it today
when we come back to America's Radio News.
If it breaks in this town, we dig deep till we know the truth.
This is America's Radio News.
In an ocean full of lab dogs, we are a media watchdog. This is America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, March 1st. Here's what's happening.
Those state senators who left with the expressed intention of trying to draw more attention to this bill, have more time to debate the bill and to discuss the bill, have succeeded. It is now time for them to come home.
Governor Scott Walker says it's time for wayward Wisconsin Democrats to return to work.
Every single Wisconsin state senator who is eligible to be recalled, and that's about half of them, will have recall petitions filed against them. Some of those will possibly be successful, some won't.
And one AWOL Wisconsin senator says he's ready to face the music.
I don't know what the rebels, what their game plan is. If they need money, they're going to produce the oil. If they're going to just try to inflict some kind of pain on the United States or the rest of the world, they'll shut it off.
And a Pickens prediction on the future of your price at the pump.
We're sweeping the nation and scouring the globe to bring you all the latest news.
And the news is breaking overseas. It is breaking here on the ground. As a matter of fact, we just broke news with our affiliate out there in Madison, Wisconsin. According to the reporting on the ground, the Capitol has not reopened as been ordered by the courts out
there
in Lower
London. Public building. Well, over in the Middle East, still crazy stuff going on in Libya. Using some of the strongest language yet, the Obama administration said today the U.S. and its allies are keeping all options on the table in response to the increasing violence in Libya directed at citizens protesting a government led by what they call a crazy dictator. Appearing on network morning shows, U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Susan Rice cast doubt on Gaddafi's sanity and ability to lead and said the international community will continue pressuring Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi with embargoes and sanctions until he steps down.
China's holdings of U.S. bonds reached $1.16 trillion at the end of December, almost $270 billion more than previously estimated. Figures came as the U.S. government recalculated its data on foreign holdings of U.S. securities from June 2010. Chinese-held treasuries have fallen since hitting a high of $1.818 trillion in October under the revised figures. Japan remained by far the second largest holder of U.S. government debt with $882 billion in December. Britain was third with $272 billion.
Well, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker quickly becoming a darling of Republicans across the country for his plan to take away most collective bargaining rights for public workers. And he'll get another chance to bolster those conservative credentials when he unveils the rest of his plan for dealing with the state budget woes today. His plan, set to be released later, will include deep cuts for schools and local governments.
From Wisconsin, back up here to Capitol Hill, and Democrat Kent Conrad, he was speaking on Capitol Hill yesterday. He laid out the dangerous path that America is on in terms of its spending. He also laid out what he thought needed to be addressed to get our soaring deficit under control. Listen.
We clearly have to make more cuts. You know, we have a debt now that is too high, 100% of the gross domestic product of the country. We're borrowing 40 cents of every dollar we spend. So clearly, we're going to have to cut more. We're going to have tax reform. We're going to have to reform the entitlements. We got a full plate here.
So you've got conservative Democrats, which Mr. Conrad does fall under that category, and you've got Republicans almost unified in saying we've got to get this under the control. So it seems to be the hardcore left-wing folks that want to maintain the current level of spending in government right now, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Harry Reid's of Capitol Hill. Those are where the battle lines seem to be drawn up here on Capitol Hill.
Well, I did hear Kent Conrad speaking on one of the Sunday shows on Sunday morning, and he was commenting about how, yes, we do need to deal with the deficit, but he also made reference to the fact that every bipartisan commission is trying to make a judgment on the budget, says be modest in the beginning, do something big over 10 years, but don't do anything dramatic to the detriment of the still recovering economy. Well, Charlie Cook from the National Journal, already looking ahead to the 2012 election and leaving the presidential election aside, Cook's focus is on control of the U.S. Senate.
Democrats face a really tough challenge trying to hold on to their majority. You know, they've got, an open seat in North Dakota that's just going to be Kent Conrad's seat. That's going to be extraordinarily difficult to hang on. You know, unless they get the right candidate, I think Democrats are going to have a very tough time in Virginia holding on to the seat that Jim Webb is vacating. And Webb would have had a very tough race anyway, but as an open seat, unless Democrats can get a Tim Kaine or someone like that, that's going to be very, very, very hard.
So what do you think, Chris?
Well, I think just looking at the numbers, more Democrats are up for re-election in the next two election cycles, not only 2012, but also 2014 than Republicans, just looking at the numbers and who's actually going to have to run. And you know what? Congress still remains at record high unpopularity around the country. So I think if you're looking at who the deck is stacked against, it looks like, at least from an analysis standpoint, the Democrats.
So you think that the president could actually be facing a Republican majority in both houses?
It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. It is a good possibility. You know, all the turmoil going on in the Middle East right now has really done a number on oil prices. And did you see gas prices, Lori, over the weekend, up 8 cents in one weekend?
It's painful.
It is painful. And oil tycoon T. Boone Pickens weighs in on how oil unrest in Libya could affect the rest of the world.
I don't know what the rebels, what their game plan is. If they need money, they're going to produce the oil. If they're going to just try to inflict some kind of pain on the United States or the rest of the world, they'll shut it off. So tell me what they want to do. If they shut off 1.5 million barrels a day, the Saudis claim that they can cover that loss. But I question that. I'm not sure how long the Saudis can cover 1.5 million barrels a day. But it's getting tighter and tighter, and the only way you can control where demand is greater than supply, and you're approaching that point, is the only way you can do anything about it is raise the price. So the oil price is going to go up.
Well, yeah, and that's the prediction. And a lot of folks, you know, at the best case, and a lot of the reporting says that here in the United States, we import over 60% of our oil. So a lot of folks are trying to use this current Libyan disaster, this meltdown in the Middle East in general and the whole region, as a mechanism to say, look, we can insulate ourselves from feeling the pain of the pump if we have more control over our own supply here in the United States, meaning we produce more.
Absolutely. And it's such a volatile situation in that oil-rich nation with no clear end in sight. Or what happens when Gaddafi leaves? What happens to the oil? Who controls anything there? It's so incredibly volatile at the moment. Well, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton yesterday spoke to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva as she discussed the Middle East uprisings, especially in Libya and, of course, Iran.
The people of Libya have made themselves clear. It is time for Gaddafi to go. Now, without further violence or delay, the international community is speaking with one voice, and our message is unmistakable. These violations of universal rights are unacceptable and will not be tolerated. Indeed, every member of this council should ask him or herself a simple question. Why do people have the right to live free from fear in Tripoli, but not Tehran? The denial of human dignity in Iran is an outrage that deserves the condemnation of all who speak out for freedom and justice.
It doesn't seem to matter, though. It's falling on deaf ears. Gaddafi is just in some kind of fantasy world. Power is obviously more important to him than anything.
Not only Gaddafi's ears, but also Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran is also turning a deaf ear to the pleas of his people. And, you know, the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has been very forceful from the beginning of these Middle East uprisings, taking a very hard stance, it seems sometimes in stark opposition to the administration that she's serving. America's Radio News continues. John Edwards. He's a former Democratic presidential nominee. He's dropped out of sight, but he may be resurfacing in the courts. We'll give you that story coming up next.
And Somali pirates holding a Danish family say they will kill their captives if any rescue attempt is made.
And do you want to laugh today? We're gonna let you laugh today. Coming up next, we're gonna tickle your funny bone right here on America's Radio News. Make sure you stay there.
All the news and hot topics when we come back to America's Radio News.
For more information, go to AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com. That's AmericasRadioNewsNetwork.com.
This is the Real News Filter.
We give you what you want. Ignore what you don't.
This is America's Radio News.
You can read about it tomorrow, sure, but you can also hear it about it right now on America's Radio News. Glad to have you on board. I'm Chris Salcedo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Lori London. Thanks for being with us. Yep. Get a little tongue-tied there, Chris.
There you go.
It's been rumored for a week, but now there is confirmation. Stop the presses. Bristol Palin has signed a book deal for her memoir titled Not Afraid of Life, set to be published this summer. And in a press release, her publisher, William Morrow, is writing, the oldest daughter of Sarah Palin and single mother goes beyond the headlines, offering readers an inside look at her life, her world, and the things that matter most, including her family and the faith that keeps her centered.
What is she, 18?
She's 20.
She's 20? And she's writing a memoir?
Yeah. Well, Justin Bieber wrote a memoir. He's only 15 or 16.
You know, kids today, they're doing so much more.
I know.
A federal grand jury in Raleigh could soon hand up an indictment against former presidential candidate Democrat Shed Edwards in a case centering on campaign finance practices. It's been alleged that Mr. Edwards knew that some of the millions of dollars given by at least two wealthy donors was being used to help support and hide Riel Hunter, the campaign videographer with whom he had a prolonged affair and a daughter they conceived. The money used to support Ms. Hunter could be considered campaign contributions if prosecutors can show that Mr. Edwards helped orchestrate donations for that purpose, or that he knew the money would be used to keep the affair hidden so it would not hurt his 2008 presidential candidacy.
His poor kids, that's all I can say.
Yikes.
Well, President Obama has at least one famous Republican supporter, Chris. That is none other than Nancy Reagan, the former First Lady. Was leaving Spago Restaurant, and she was with the Secret Service team yesterday when a paparazzo asked, "What do you think of President Obama? How is he doing?" And her reply was simply, "He's doing well."
Well, that's very nice of her. You know, she's keeping up that tradition that the spouses nor the former presidents actually comment on how the current administration is doing. Of course, not all presidents have actually adhered to that tradition.
This is true, but of course,
over the years,
we do know President Obama just recently said he read a book by Ronald Reagan, so he's trying to emulate him.
White House Press Secretary, speaking of Mr. Obama, Jake Carney yesterday clarified comments that our president, Mr. Obama, said that public workers should not be vilified.
The president warned governors not to denigrate or vilify public employees. Does he think that's what they've been doing?
He does not believe that it is helpful to denigrate or vilify public sector employees in a way that brings you no closer to resolving the problems and sows division instead of creating the kind of unity that you need when everyone sits at the table to solve the issues together. So
you would characterize what's been happening as a denigration and vilification?
Well, I would refer you to his speech, and I think that it's fairly clear from what he said in the past that he does not think that an assault on public sector employees or the collective bargaining rights of public sector employees is the way to go.
I have looked at Scott Walker's and John Kasich's and all these other governors that are trying to get public employee unions under control in their states. I have yet to find anything that has vilified these state workers. I mean, in the true definition under Webster's Dictionary, a vilification of these individuals. Now, talking about their rights to collective bargain, they can take position stances. They believe that is right or wrong. But I have not seen a vilification yet to date of these individuals.
They feel their democratic rights are just being massacred. I actually did hear that former Senator Rick Santorum compared the protesters to drug addicts.
Right.
They were like drug addicts.
But none of the people that are involved actually in this debate have actually vilified these public employee workers.
No, they're just, you know, in their mind, just looking, they feel like their whole collective bargaining rights are potentially being gutted. Moving on, British Prime Minister David Cameron outlined the United Kingdom's plans for retrieving any British nationals from Libya and from dispensing aid to those displaced by the violence there.
We have a very clear strategy and plan to deal with this issue. First of all, quite rightly, we have given overwhelming priority to evacuation of our own citizens, of British nationals, and I'm pleased with the way that's gone, particularly in the last few days. Obviously, we're keeping a very close eye on the remaining numbers and those, now a relatively small number, that still want to leave, and doing everything we can to help them. The second stage has been to put the maximum possible pressure on this regime, and we have done that both internationally and nationally. We've led the process in the UN Security Council drafting that resolution, and we put in place over the weekend travel bans, asset freezes, everything we can to isolate and starve that regime of money and of support. The next stage in our planning must be, tragically, planning for the humanitarian difficulties, potential humanitarian crisis there could be.
And Secretary of State Hillary Clinton just said today that, you know, making it a no-fly zone is definitely on the table. It's something they're definitely considering. But, you know, we don't know how long this thing can go on. I don't know how much longer this guy can hold out.
Yeah, the capitals of Europe have definitely been taking the lead on this Libyan crisis. That is for sure. All right, Charlie Sheen, back to Planet Sheen. Oh, boy. During last night's interview on CNN, Piers Morgan asked Mr. Sheen if he felt regret over his bad behavior.
I think it's a waste of time because I can't change it. You know, I tell people that are sort of, you know, glued to their past, if you can walk back there and bring me a souvenir from that moment when your father locked you in the closet, then bring it to me. Bring me the ashtray from his office with that burning Swisher Sweet in it. You can't. The moment's over. It doesn't exist. We got to get into right here, right now.
So no regret. Moving on.
I mean, moving on.
Yeah.
A day after dealing with his client, Charlie Sheen's bizarre talk show tour, his longtime publicist now, Max Levine, is calling it quits.
Well, I would have left earlier than this. I think he has left his calling card long ago on the world as to whether or not he is acting in profoundly self-destructive ways. I mean, it's become so bizarre, so self-destructive, it's almost hard to dignify without seeming insane yourself.
Well, you know, he's done with the guy, and he's a friend of his, mm-hmm. very close friend. I heard Sheen last night talking to Piers Morgan about it, and you know, he Charlie Sheen loves the guy.
How many folks are fleeing Planet Sheen right now?
You know, I have to be compassionate here and say this guy, obviously, either he's manic depressive, he's bipolar, or he's coming off drugs and he's just lost it. We have to try to get past laughing at him.
CBS, his agent.
Very sad.
People, actors that are, you know, there are some that are flocking to his defense, but I think this is going to get even more bizarre before it resolves. That's for sure. All right, let's leave you on a happy note. And when I say happy note, I mean really, really happy. Alyssa Milano, the actress, actually tweeted about this video I'm about to tell you about. It's gone viral on YouTube. Basically, it's a guy that has a little boy named Micah. And Micah was sitting on the couch, and he got a rejection letter. Not Micah, but his dad got a rejection letter because he was applying for a job. And so he decided to tear up the rejection letter and listen to what came out of Micah's mouth.
Oh!
If only life were that simple.
Listen to him right there. He's busting a gut right there. Well, there you go. That is America's Radio News, leaving you with some laughter today. But we'll be back tomorrow for the middle of the week. We're going to keep an eye on something that's not a laughing matter, and that's what's happening on the streets of Madison, Wisconsin. We'll give you an update.
And, of course, we will continue to keep our eyes on the volatile situation in Libya as calls for Muammar Gaddafi to resign get louder.
For Lori London, I'm Chris Salcedo. This has been America's Radio News. We'll be back here tomorrow for a Wednesday, everybody. See ya.